Blog Talk Radio.
Anyone whose steady partner keeps them dangling without a solid relationship or suddenly without warning seems to have disappeared. Ghosting and breadcrumbing, common terms nowadays, has become a serious problem for many people. Stay tuned to learn more about this. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the life-changing and love-changing Love Lessons for Your Soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. And in every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Dr. Marnie Feuerman is a licensed clinical social worker and licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice in South Florida. She holds a master's degree in social work and a doctorate in psychology. She's nationally recognized as a relationship and marriage expert with specialized training in couples therapy. She's also a syndicated freelance writer and has written her debut self-help book, Ghosted and Breadcrumbed: Stop Falling for Unavailable Men and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships, which is available at Amazon and everywhere books are sold. So her website is drmarnieonline.com, and I'm excited to welcome you, Marnie.
Thank you, Dr. Erica. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So I know you've been writing a lot for Huffington Post and for YourTango.com and many other about.com. So what led you, let's talk about a little bit about your background training that led you to work with couples, and then what led you to specifically write this kind of book?
I think I was always drawn to working with couples, or working what we call systemically, in other words, with a system, meaning more than one person. It just was very challenging, and I feel like it challenged me as far as my, whether it was my work, my education, it drew me in. And then, of course, as you know, sometimes the work chooses us. We don't choose the work.
Yes.
And I think it helped me figure out a lot of my own stuff, my own history, my own patterns of relating, the impact of things that happened to me growing up in my own family. And so you feel like it's a calling as well, where you can really be helpful to people because there's a sense of purpose in doing it. And so I slowly, you know, over time, after you get your education and license and all that stuff, I slowly veered into working mostly with couples and finding I really enjoyed it. It's hard. It's not, you know, it's definitely much more challenging than working one-on-one with people. But again, I really enjoyed that. And so I also started to write a lot because I love writing as well. So it was a natural fit to write on topics that affect couples, relationships, love. And some of the articles that I wrote got a lot of views online, got a lot of shares, got a lot of emails to me of, you know, from people wanting either more on the topic or wanting to share their own story. And some of those articles concerned being in destructive relationships, relationships where there was emotional abuse or being with being an affair partner. So maybe a woman that is involved with a married man and she is waiting and hoping and she's being told promises of a future. And then she finds years going by where it's not materializing and she feels stuck. So this is what got me a lot of people reaching out. And I felt like this must be something that people really need. There must be a lot of struggle. And people usually go online with this kind of thing. It's not easy to talk about with friends or families if you feel like you're in an unhealthy relationship or you're really suffering or love isn't going well for you. It can bring up a lot of shame and insecurities in people. So people are going online to search for this stuff, and they're really absorbing a lot of information that is available. And so I thought, this is what I have to write a book about, because I could see that lots of women, both in my practice and also from the articles that were being read, that there's a lot more that I could put out there that could also be very affordable. Okay, we know paperback books are affordable, which is nice. Not everyone can afford a therapist. But that I could package this information in a way that would be easily attainable, both financially and also a physical product that people could get their hands on and do some self-help and reflection and maybe figure some things out to hopefully better their lives and make better choices.
Well, I love the title of it. So this is really a good place for me to ask you, what does it mean to be ghosted and breadcrumbed? And there are a few other terms you might throw out that are being used nowadays with the internet. So just explain.
Yes, there's a lot of terms that are coming out that to describe negative dating experiences. And some of the terms sound kind of funny or quirky. You know, like you said in the introduction, ghosted. You have a connection with somebody. Maybe you have a date. Maybe you have a few dates. Maybe you've even seen them a couple of months. And then poof, they disappear. There's no contact. You don't hear from them. You're left wondering what's going on. I'm not sure who first coined that term, but it really resonated for people. And then we have other ones. Breadcrumbs is like being strung along. I've heard things like stashing, you know, keeping someone on the sidelines, not introducing them to their inner circle, but you're still kind of throwing some romantic interest in there. So there's more and more every day. There's probably at least 10 of them now. But the bottom line is these are really painful experiences for people. They still hurt. They still leave people confused. It really muddies the waters of what should be, you know, an exciting experience, you know, dating, trying to find someone to fall in love with, spend the rest of your life with, or if you're divorced and you're all new at this again, getting out there, you know, to have these experiences is really daunting. I think the internet online dating has made those experiences even more prevalent. It's much easier to just go off the radar with somebody that maybe you met them online and you live a little further away. You're not maybe in the same inner circle, but then suddenly no contact. You don't hear from them anymore. And it's very frustrating for people. And I think it also shows, you know, maybe a lack of empathy in the dating process. You know, these are still human beings. We want to approach it in a more sensitive way and maybe just give someone some closure, you know, and it doesn't have to be complicated. It could just be, hey, enjoyed this time with you, but I don't quite see a future and, you know, good luck. And it was nice that date we had last week, but you know, I just don't see a future, you know, just something to tie up the loose ends. And the fact that that's not happening anymore struggling.
For a lot of
people, struggle with that.
Excuse me, Marty, for a lot of people, that's difficult. They just, it's so much easier not to face the person. So what I want
to
ask
not to
next
face them.
Is describe some of the kinds of, mostly men, that you talk about in your book, like dysfunctional or difficult or unavailable.
Yeah, I think both men and women are born with the same, you know, capacity for emotion, for verbalizing emotion, for connecting. I think men and women desire the same things. They both want, a best friend and someone that they're sexually attracted to and all that. So I think if you look at it in a big picture way, there's a lot of similarities. But I think somewhere over time, women and men get socialized quite differently. And I think that the capability that men have to really connect in an emotional way with women and really show up and be present and express themselves is really squashed. Now we have this term that I heard sometime after even that the book was in production, you know, toxic masculinity. And I think that's what we're also talking about here as well. And so it causes a lot of struggle when it comes to relating. Women, it's very acceptable to express yourself emotionally. We're very relational. We care more about the relationship than, let's say, you know, the competition of things. We want people to get along. Just, and I know I'm generalizing here, but as a whole, I think that also I see this in my practice too, where women are dragging the men in a lot for the counseling. And also we know that I think the statistic, I'm not 100% sure, but something like 2/3 of divorces are initiated by women. So women are walking away from these men because they don't feel an emotional connection. So I do think for different reasons, men struggle with this on a whole much more than women. And women then tend to try to control, change, fix, overfunction. And then before long, they lose themselves in these relationships. And so I really do want women, you know, in the book, I talk about it a lot about, you know, what can you change? What can't you change? What do you have influence over? How to know when to stay in, how to know when to walk away, how to know if you're repeating some of your own patterns from childhood, you know, trying to get some unmet need met or something along those lines. And so I really want women to explore and reflect on this to figure out, you know, what they're doing in relationships and what they're willing to change both in themselves and let go if a partner won't change and what they have to do about that.
And when you said the word toxic masculinity, what came to mind for me is also toxic femininity. You know, women that are not just maybe talk about that. I don't know if you wrote about that, but just from your experience.
Yeah, I don't know as much about that, but I think what I think you're probably saying is about that we have certain gender roles that probably work really well because they're complementary, the masculine energy and the feminine energy. And I think you're going to want somebody who's aligned with your values. And that's what I talk a lot about in the book. So if you value certain things that are, let's say, strongly feminine type traits, you know, there's no judgment there about that. It's just, but you've got to find somebody who values that as well and not try to change somebody who perhaps doesn't value that. So I think if you've also got to figure out what your core values are and that somebody else is has those same values and also wants the same thing that you want at the same time. That's the only way the relationship is going to go in the right direction.
Yeah. So the next question is, why do so many people have so much difficulty in relationships?
Well, I think some people are doing it really well, and we have some good science around that, like what works and why, and you know, with the masters and disasters of relationships. So there's good information out there. But I think when people find, particularly when they're repeating unhealthy patterns over and over, like when I hear somebody saying, I keep attracting the same type of person, or this is like relationship deja vu. I think there's several factors that contribute to that tendency. I think one of the things is that we tend to repeat what's familiar. We may even know on an intellectual level that it's not good for us or it's dysfunctional in some way, but we have a familiarity based on our early childhood experiences, what's called in the field, in the field of psychology and even sociology, is family of origin and those influences. So family of origin is the family you're born into. And a lot gets pushed into our implicit memory, which is our unconscious memory. So it's sort of like a running theme in the background. And so that still impacts you. And so if you had bad or negative childhood experiences, or you learned things in, let's say, a faulty way, you learned some things that maybe aren't true, or you learned how to be and how to express yourself, that continues to influence you in your relationships. Particularly like if you know, some children we know have been even told they're bad, or that they deserve abuse in some way, or they're scapegoated. We can internalize those things and take that on, and we blame ourselves, and our self-esteem can get eroded from that. So we may even be in a bad situation, and for some reason we think, well, we deserve it. You know, this is just my normal. This is what I've always experienced. So maybe this is the way it's supposed to be. And then we also repeat beliefs, the way to cope with things, and certain behavioral patterns. They think they can become really entrenched. There's a phrase in the field as well called, that people say, what fires together wires together, meaning that our brain tends to fire in certain patterns, and that's how certain patterns become entrenched as well. It doesn't mean that you can't change them later on, but we want to know, well, what did fire together? You know, what did happen to me that I maybe some unconscious part is running the show here, and I need to gain some type of mastery over it. You know, what are those the unfinished business of my early life in relationships? And sometimes it also is in your past adult relationships as well. Like if you've had two or three horrible situations and breakups or people who treated you badly, that then tends to get in there as well. And so sometimes the repetition just gets played out over and over and over again. And we don't realize that we can create a different outcome, and we keep recreating the same outcome.
Well, the next question is, how do you do this? How does someone get out of an unhealthy pattern and choosing a partner that plays out that pattern? How do they get out of that and then choose something that maybe will make them happier?
The number one thing that people need to do, which I stress in the book, is to develop self-awareness. We can't change what we don't know. And so if a lot of this is in our unconscious mind, we have to bring that into awareness. We have to connect dots. We have to say, oh, here's what happened to me. Here's the impact of it. And we have to create a coherent narrative about our early years and the influences of it, so that then we can say, I don't want to continue this. I don't want to do this anymore. And then we want to learn, well, what is healthy? You know, what does healthy relating and a healthy relationship look like? And are there things that I'm doing that allow me to, let's say, accept poor treatments? or accept a lack of an emotional connection and just kind of go along, like that's okay. Like what are we doing that's continuing these patterns? And I think we also have a lot of good science now to help us. And a big piece of it is attachment, what we call attachment theory or attachment science. And that's one of the most substantiated theories in psychology. And so from attachment, we understand how these patterns of relating are formed in our early childhood years, and they generally hold stable throughout our lives. And so the pattern, again, this isn't pathology, so I want to distinguish that. I'm not talking about something that's pathological, because we all have a pattern. And the pattern is either secure or you've developed an insecure pattern. And when you've developed a secure pattern or style, that's because you've had consistent, reliable care in your early years. There was a felt sense of safety. There was always someone taking care of you, helped you make sense of your experiences, probably allowed a very safe avenue for emotional expression and understanding your emotional experience. And so in adulthood, those people that had that secure attachment really thrive from that healthy bond that they had. And so then they also enjoy close, intimate relationships later on in life. They're not afraid to take risks when it comes to love. They have a good view of love, commitment, relationships. But on the other side, we have people who maybe have not formed such a secure attachment. They've had inconsistency, unreliable care. Maybe there was even a lack of safety, possibly even abuse. And so that insecure attachment style carries on through adult romantic relationships. And those styles are usually marked by a lot of fear and mixed feelings about love and intimacy. But we can reconcile that later on as well. It's not, although it's a pattern that is relatively consistent, the good news is it is malleable. So we can change it. We can figure out ways, whether through healthy relationships or even our own self-talk, reparenting ourselves in a way and being kind to ourselves, we can make these better choices. We don't have to be a victim of maybe what wasn't so good for us and those experiences. So that, I think, understanding attachment has been really revolutionary for people to make better choices in relationships and not necessarily blame themselves maybe for the way they're acting and the way other people are acting sometimes, because they've been coping skills. They've been ways that you've survived, but they're not functioning well anymore. Once you get out in the world and you start having friendships and romantic relationships.
Yeah. So you also talk about emotions. So where do emotions mm-hmm. come into this, and how do they help or hinder our creating good relationships?
Oh, emotions are really, really important. They help us survive, thrive, avoid danger. They tell us what we need. Emotions motivate us to take action. So emotions play a big role in how we think and behave. And through emotion, we can understand ourselves and others. And so if I guess a good example would be in how I treat couples. And so my approach involves uncovering emotional triggers and trying to uncover the deeper, more vulnerable emotions that are often get expressed very defensively. And so sometimes we don't realize that the emotion we're expressing or what a partner might see in us is actually fueled by these unmet attachment needs and longings. And so if we can understand why we're feeling a certain way, but also the deeper feeling that's involved, then we can communicate that much better. So if I just am, let's say, screaming and yelling at somebody and I'm showing anger because deep down I feel really hurt or I feel a sense of rejection, if I tune into that, that's going to help me figure out, well, what do I really need to do here? you know, how can I effectively communicate this? And if it doesn't change, so if I'm in a relationship and I'm communicating from a more vulnerable place about my needs, and it's still, let's say, met with, you know, someone who doesn't care about it or shuns it or says, well, you know, I can't do that for you. You're going to have to go figure that out on your own. Again, that's information that will tell us, do I want to stay with this person? Do I need to move on to someone else? Maybe I should be with somebody who really wants to help me with my emotional needs, especially now that I really know what they are. So I think to be able to clearly and effectively identify and communicate your needs, the emotions are the pathway to figuring all of that out.
And it's not just your emotions, it's the emotions of the other person too, to understand.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Because sometimes we're not reading somebody else correctly. We're not, I like the word attunement. We want somebody attuned to us, but we also have to attune to them. We have to tune into what we're seeing and picking up on. Usually it's the nonverbal, you know, a lot of times that we're picking up on.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, when someone who maybe is avoidant or tends to avoid emotional intimacy, it may not be just that they're purposely trying to push you away, but that they're scared. So fear maybe underlies them pushing away emotional intimacy. So if we can get to the heart of that, we can strengthen the bond, or the bond is just going to weaken. Okay. So this is how we build trust as well. So if we can come to our partners and be able to talk about these, you know, innermost fears and these deeper parts of ourselves, that's what strengthens an emotional bond. And so we want to take risks in love and do that. And so if you're with a partner that is continually, you know, making themselves unavailable for that, withdrawing from that, dismissing that, it will either make you more anxious and up your efforts, or effectively communicate it and realize, okay, this is going to change. I have a person who maybe is able to say to me, hey, I want to do this. I'm motivated to do this, but I'm a little scared, you know, or this frightens me, or I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to express my emotional world to you, but at least you're getting somewhere, you know, at least you're starting to see, okay, this is someone who really wants to connect with me, but maybe they're not sure how, but they're motivated to. So all of this is good information for us.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, because there's so much talk about get rid of this person and get rid of that person, and it isn't quite like that. A relationship is two people.
Right.
So the next question I have for you is, what is a healthy relationship? Maybe describe what you consider a healthy or a dysfunctional relationship. What are some of the characteristics?
A healthy relationship, like I touched on before, about having shared values, shared goals to the relationship. You both are seeing the future in the same direction and it lines up. It definitely is about the ability to really show up and be emotionally present and emotionally available. Because people want to feel like, I would say, if I, in a nutshell, feeling like somebody has your back, that there's someone there for you, that you can rely and count on this person. So they are consistent. They do respond. And that the trust is developed over time. It doesn't have to happen instantly right away, but that there aren't things that happen that cause you to mistrust. The trust should go in the right direction, that it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And that if there's a breach in the trust, or you fall off somehow, that there's a road back to repairing it. Because I find some people think, well, if you loved me, you would never make this mistake or do this thing to me. Well, you know what? People do mess up. People do make mistakes. But what's the couple doing, or two people doing, to get back on track and to talk about it, and to maybe, you know, even apologize in a heartfelt way if they have to? So the relationship can ebb and flow, but that you get back into alignment with those things. And so overall, that's what I would say makes a healthy relationship, that you feel really confident that this person would be there for you in your time of needs and your ups and downs, and that they have your best interests at heart.
Well, you know, that's what we're looking for in a relationship. Instead of like Hollywood might make it that you find this perfect, rich, beautiful model, you know, businessman, that's not necessarily what's going to make someone happy in a relationship.
No, if you buy into the Hollywood standard, you're going to be disappointed. That is true. That's true. So, yeah, and also knowing that, you know, people think that they should, that the person should be their soulmate. It doesn't mean you're not soulfully connected, but if you think this is a soulmate, then they should probably be able to read your mind, know everything, be at your beck and call, and so that's not true. We really do have to communicate our needs and our desires and be really clear about it, and don't think that you don't have that responsibility to do that.
So, one more question before you tell about your book and background. What final tip would you give, particularly to a woman who's in one of these difficult relationships and she's feeling ghosted or breadcrumbed or some of those other things put on the side?
I would say take a risk to share and directly communicate what things are like for you in the relationship, and then really listen to the answer, really listen to the response. So, for example, if you go to somebody and say, you know, I'm not feeling so safe and secure about things. It doesn't make me feel so good that it's hard to reach you. Or when I ask you about, you know, the status of the relationship, you change the subject or make a joke. It's really important to me to know where I stand and where we're going. And I know this isn't the most fun conversation to have. It's hard for me to have it, but you know, I really want us to be on the same page. And if we're not, we should address that. And then you're going to really want to listen to the answer and the response. And if it's not clear, don't think that things are necessarily going to change if they're not changing. If you're not seeing actual behavioral change from the person that you're looking for, don't make excuses or think it's going to happen or it's going to change. You have to live your life and empower yourself to make the best choices for you, because a choice in a partner is one of the most important choices you're going to make in your life. And if you don't feel like you're treated properly, you don't have to accept it anymore. And that you can have a life full of purpose aside from just having that relationship. And maybe that's where you need to focus on that, you know, maybe you also have to give yourself more credit that you can tolerate maybe some time where you might be alone, you might be unpartnered. That you won't be overwhelmed by the emotion or the experience, and that you can make your life fulfilling, and that somebody who comes into it really complements it, and it's the right person, that you're not just settling or going along thinking, you know, letting life pass you by. Because that's the thing I hear the most is that, you know, life, we only have one life. And so you're going to want to make really good choices with as far as a partner goes and who you allow in your life.
Beautifully said. So now just please share with us how people can contact you, how they can get your book, and your wonderful workshops that you offer, and anything else.
Sure, yeah. All the information is on my website, drmarnieonline.com, which is drmarnieonline.com. And that will be the gateway to everything, the different services that I offer, where to find me in my South Florida office. I would say get on the my email list, because I have also different offerings coming down the pike. I'm looking to possibly create some e-courses because I really want, again, this information to get out to people in an affordable way. You can learn more about the book on the website, and you'll find links to everywhere you can buy it, but it is available in all the bookstores and certainly on Amazon. And I would love to hear feedback about it too. If you get your hands on a copy and read it, I'd love to hear from people who maybe, you know, whatever they have to say about it, feedback, how it may have changed their outlook on something or made them make a different decision. I really like hearing that information from people.
Well, thank you, Dr. Marnie. It's really been great talking with you, and I know that our listeners will get a lot of value.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Erica. It was really a pleasure being on your show, and I really enjoy the topics that you talk about as well. So it was fantastic to be a part of it.
Thank you. And I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com, for a complimentary Love Mastery secret session, or to book me to speak, or whatever questions you might have. And there's lots of free available stuff on there, videos, audios, etc. So I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Bye for now.